Welcome to Radioactive, an environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco. I'm Carolyn Coe, sitting in for Meredith this week. Palestinians have been in refugee camps in Lebanon for nearly 70 years. Those in their 20s who graduate from university now struggle to find work in a country that prohibits, or at the very least makes it very challenging, for Palestinians to work in about 77 occupations. Syrians who have fled war also want to work, but face similar obstacles to making a life in Lebanon. On today's program, we meet a couple Palestinian 20-somethings and one Syrian woman. We also speak with the founder of an organization that brings together Palestinians, Syrians, and poor Lebanese, as it strives to promote respect and give hope to different marginalized communities. In a writing workshop in July 2017, Hawda Dawood chose to write about what she could see from her rooftop in Ain al-Helway, a Palestinian refugee camp in Saida, Lebanon.
I like the roof because it shows a view of all the camp. Well, it has some beautiful things and some ugly things. Well, the wires, the electricity wires are tangled, but I can see the sea. and the best part of it is a neighboring palm tree, a huge one. I like it the most.
And your rooftop, it's above what floor? How many stories is the house?
Two floors only.
Okay. And still from the second floor, you can see the sea.
Yeah.
So the other buildings in the area are not very tall either.
Yeah, because the area I live in is like a hill. It's, yeah, that's why.
Hawda Dawood, 23, is a Palestinian refugee. She graduated a year ago from the American University of Beirut, majoring in economics. Dawood has struggled to find work, confronting the barriers to employment for Palestinians living in Lebanon. And as she looks, she has been doing some tutoring in English and math. She is also the volunteer coordinator of We Are Not Numbers in Lebanon, an organization which pairs Palestinian youth writers in Lebanon and Gaza with mentors, providing the writers a platform for sharing their life stories and struggles. Living in the refugee camp is itself a stressor. Again, Hawda Dawood.
I was lucky to get the most calm area in the camp, but it's still, we have many clashes, fightings, we have gunshots, snipers, everything. So we have times that we can't freely move on around the camp or even get outside the camp. Well, I managed to to live sort of normally, but it's still a struggle.
I asked Hawda to elaborate.
Yeah, I remember one time I was about maybe 13 years old only, and there was a clash happening outside the school, and the principal took the wrong decision of letting us out the school, and we moved to the street and the bullets were above our head. Yeah, but we survived.
Who is fighting in the camp?
Some of them are personal problems, but because of the random weapons they own. And others are, for example, with Fatah versus Islamic groups.
Recently, We Are Not Numbers has begun an exchange pairing a Palestinian writer with a Black Lives Matter activist. In this exchange, youth call, chat, or message each other on a weekly basis to share their stories and reflect on their experiences. The idea, said Hawda Dawood, is that the Black Lives Matter activists will come to know more about the Palestinian cause and vice versa, and then write about it. Among the personal stories Hawda Dawood has published for We Are Not Numbers is one about her father.
My father is a regular refugee. He lived his life here in Lebanon. He left when he was about 17 years old, a teenager, to fight here with the PLO in the South Lebanon. And then after 45 years, he decided, and he was able to get to Gaza to see his family. He went with my mother and spent a month there, and then he had a heart attack and passed away. He was buried there, and my mother came back to us.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have three sisters and two brothers.
For Hawda Dawood, writing for We Are Not Numbers has helped her find community.
I always loved writing. I love telling stories. But before I had that feeling of not wanting people to read my writings. I like to write for myself. But then after We're Not Numbers, I shared many I challenged myself to write more and to publish them, and it turned to be a beautiful feeling when you hear someone commenting on something you write.
Do you have a favorite piece that you have written?
Well, the story of my father was my favorite one, because it really, it was like a turning point for me, being able to express all that feeling and letting people read it.
Yeah. And how old were you at the time that your father passed away?
18 years old.
Also attending the July 2017 We Are Not Numbers Writing Workshop in Beirut was Dalia Swaid.
I used to be a state-employed teacher in Syria, teaching English language as a second language for kids from grade 1 to grade 6 in a primary school. Because of violence and war, I was obliged to live with my family and came to Lebanon.
Dalia moved from home Syria to Beirut in North Lebanon. What she thought would be a 10-day visit with her youngest son to see family members living in Lebanon has turned into 5 years because of the war.
When I first, I finished my job at school, and then summer vacation came. Then I decided to visit my parents, my sister here in Lebanon. And I was planning to stay just for 10 days and came back to my home. Then suddenly my husband calls, "Oh, don't come back. I'll try to escape with the kids, with the other two kids at home." As I told you, I'm still here for 5 years.
Finding suitable and affordable housing in Lebanon has proven challenging.
And here in Lebanon, are you staying with the family members that you had originally visited when you came here?
First, I stayed with my parents and family for 1 month. Then when we managed to rent a room, which was not, it was unfinished room. It was with no windows, and it was for about $150. Then we later could find another house, which my friend visited, the old house. It was only one room and one little hall with no kitchen, and it was with no windows for the first six months. It was for about $250 per month.
The room without glass in the windows was open to the wind and cold. 9 family members shared the small room when the in-laws moved in. Dalia Swaid noted that the Palestinian and Syrian refugees face common challenges in Lebanon.
The most important issue that, whether for the Syrians or Palestinians, that we need a solution, a permanent solution. And the solution, believe me, we don't want to be rich outside in other countries. Just, we are not lazy people. We want to work. Okay, I prefer sure to go back to my homeland. But now I don't have options. So I wish to find solutions, whether for the Syrians or Palestinians.
Since coming to Lebanon, Dalia has interviewed other Syrian refugees, including child laborers.
I made an interview with the working children, the Syrian working children, who were dropped out of school because they need to help their families, sustain the family. Yeah. Most of them were orphans or they suffer from that their parents separated. Yeah, and they were obliged to work all the day for maybe $10 a week, $13, yeah.
In Beirut, Lebanon, Syrian refugee children are in the streets daily, brushing up against pedestrians or walking between cars on city streets, begging. During the July writing workshop, Dalia Swaid wrote about the view from what used to be her home in Syria.
I remembered my house in Syria when I was standing on the roof and see the backyard, the green backyard, the different flowers. That was a very comfortable scene, a relaxing scene. Now I don't have such things in Lebanon.
And you also described to me earlier about how beautiful your house was before, yeah. And someone sent you a picture,
yeah,
of how it had been destroyed.
It was destroyed when we were still at home. It was bombed and destroyed completely. We are lucky we survived, me, my husband, and my little kids. Later, when we left and the army entered the village, they stole everything in the house, then burned it.
They survived the earlier bombing by hiding in a shelter. They came to Lebanon, but found making a life there difficult, so they returned to Syria. They rebuilt their house, and 2 years later, in 2013, they again fled to Lebanon.
How do you feel here in Lebanon?
Oh, I feel depression all the time. Yeah. Imagine yourself that you have a salary, you have a permanent job, you have such good life. And everything now is upside down.
When we wrapped up our interview, Dalia Swaid showed the video a relative in the army had sent of her burned-out home, the windows gone, the walls blackened. She flipped through images on her phone, showing picture after picture of what used to be her home, her garden, her cats. This was my living room, she said. This was my kitchen. Each room neat, warm, inviting. All is gone now. Hawda Dawood, meanwhile, checked her phone every 2 minutes to see if she got a job with the nonprofit organization Unite Lebanon Youth Project, or ULIP. ULIP works to empower youth to increase the chances that they will graduate and overcome barriers to employment. ULIP's founder, Melek Nemer, is originally from Turkey and married to a Palestinian. She shared the motivation for starting ULIP.
All in all, we took a decision to establish ULIP because it became very obvious that whatever you do inside a refugee camp, whatever program you offer stays there. So we realized that what we need to do is take the participants of our programs out of the camps, mm-hmm, and have them participate in programs alongside other people from other marginalized communities across Lebanon.
ULIP works together with Palestinian and Syrian refugees, as well as Lebanese public school students. They come to an oasis with classrooms, dormitories, an expansive vegetable garden, a swimming pool, and covered soccer field. In early July, university graduates were practicing business English to improve their job landing prospects. Syrian women living locally were gathered for a discussion group in another room. Preschoolers were raising their arms above their heads to become bananas, and 7 to 14-year-olds, bused in from Beirut, were swimming and playing soccer as part of a 6-week summer camp. Nimer believes ULIP gives these youth hope.
I mean, of course, the whole idea is conflict resolution, so when a student comes to, let's say, participate in our Mosaic program, they get the child or the youth comes thinking that he's there just to learn how to do mosaics. Of course, that's the educational tool that we use to achieve conflict resolution, and you can physically see it. I mean, first day around the table, you have the Lebanese on one side, you have the Syrians, let's say, standing on the other side, and then there's always like a light bulb moment when they realize that no matter who's coming from where, their worst nightmare, which is extreme poverty, is common to all of them. And then everything else falls in place because they're all children at the end of the day. And that's an achievement in itself. You saw the campus. Being on that campus is value added before they've started doing anything. Going back to Hope, when you have a program, for example, we had something called Skills for Life. It was funded by the EU. We worked with 1,000 kids who were at the risk of dropping out of the UNRWA schools.
UNRWA is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, charged with supporting Palestinian refugees expelled from their land in 1948 and 1967.
And when the kids come to you and tell you after a few weeks that it's the first time in their life that somebody is being treated with respect, and they are told that they can succeed if they want to, as opposed to having been told all their life by their teachers in their schools that they're stupid and they'll never amount to anything, that is hope. Right?
Melek Nimer shared the dropout figures for Palestinians in the UN schools.
So there are 68 or 69 UNRWA schools across Lebanon. And this is the only country where they have secondary schools. Because the Palestinians are not guaranteed places in the public secondary schools. So there are 9 of these schools are secondary schools. And when you look at the whole system, in grade 1, you will have about 3,000 students entering the system. Mm-hmm. And in grade 12, every year, you have about 1,000 students that pass the official exams and graduate. Mm. For me, that says it all. You know, you don't hear this because it's not something that the system, I'm sure they're not proud of it, but this is it. This is basically what it is. You know, it's not the same thing like saying, dropout rate this year was 7%. No, I mean, you have to look at the totality of it. Or you have, maybe it could be 7% this year, but maybe it was 27%,
The aim of one ULIP program, the Bridge Program, is to get as many students as possible into Tier 1 schools. With this diploma, Palestinians have at least a chance for employment in Lebanon in their field, despite the Lebanese ban on work in many job sectors. Nimer believes that Palestinian students who excel should leave Lebanon.
The only thing that makes a difference is a graduate from a university like AUB. Mm-hmm. And then we're encouraging as many of them as we can to go and study abroad. And this is my personal opinion, they should not come back because there's absolutely nothing for them to come back to. You know, we have enough disappointed, unemployed doctors and engineers sitting in the camps here, and that's a breeding ground for extremism. It is not like if you're Chinese and your government sends you to study in the States, of course you should be expected to go back and give back. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing for these students to come back to or and they would be, again, this is my opinion, better they'll be better ambassadors for us abroad. I mean, so when a European whose only impression of Palestinians is either somebody who has a gun in his hand or is lying in a puddle of blood, when they meet a successful Palestinian doctor in Germany, that for me is much more important than having a student who graduates from a school of medicine abroad, come back here and work in a clinic in a camp.
According to the Lebanese Palestinian Dialogue Committee, which is attached to the Prime Minister's office, about 280,000 Palestinians live in Lebanon. 60 to 80,000 of these are of workforce age, and an even smaller percentage are seeking work outside the home, because many work at home caring for their children. Members of the Lebanese government state that Palestinians must be denied employment in about 77 fields because they would take jobs away from the Lebanese. Melek Nimer, however, argues that denying equal employment rights to Palestinians living in Lebanon in fact hurts the Lebanese economy. Referring to Palestinians, Nimer stated,
These people, if they are they are allowed to earn a decent living, they will be spending that money in this country. They don't. It's not like people who come from the Far East. Every single penny they earn is sent back home. These people will be spending it here. So, in reality, it will be good for the economy. But I think the Palestinians are like a card in everybody's hand that they're holding to use at some point.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
What I mean is, for example, that's it. I mean, why aren't they allowed to work? Why aren't they allowed to have... why aren't they given the Lebanese nationality with all its civil rights? And maybe not be allowed to vote. I mean, I understand there's a very fragile sectarian system here. But that doesn't mean that you should not allow people to work. I mean, they can work, they can own real estate, but they don't necessarily have to vote. I mean, you can treat people like human beings. I don't think there's any excuse for that. We're talking about 70 years. 70 years, and you have raw sewage running in the camps. It's very ironic. There was a project called Lhasa, which was... Palestinian children were given disposable cameras and asked to take pictures, and their pictures were made into a book, and it was an exhibition. Years later, I went to an exhibition of photographs that again eventually became a book by the same organization. The photographs were taken by Syrian refugees. Walking around in that exhibition, I realized for a moment that if I did not know where I was, I would have easily assumed that these were photographs of Palestinian camps. So what I'm saying is, if 70 years on, where they're living is still looking very similar to where the Syrians who have just arrived are living, that is very, very sad. Right?
In Borj al-Barajne, a Palestinian refugee camp on the outskirts of Beirut, is a physical therapy office created by the Social Support Society, the umbrella organization for the ULIP program. There we meet physical therapist Amira Dabah, age 23. Dabah works 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 2 p.m.
I'm a Palestinian. I'm not allowed to work outside. I need to have approval from the Ministry of Health. I can't get it because I'm a Palestinian. So here in the camp, no one can ask for this.
So you went to university in Beirut to study physical therapy, but with that degree, you can only work inside the camp.
Yes, that's right.
Dabah's clients range from children to elders. Amira Dabah describes her work.
All physical therapy service we can provide for all cases, neurological cases, orthopedic, for geriatrics, pediatrics, any case.
And what are the most common complaints, the most common issues amongst the elderly who come here?
First of all, before we opened the clinic here, they faced problem to go outside the camp for physical therapy service. Then when we open here, they find it so easy to have a physical therapy service. It's so beside their homes. They don't need to wake up early, go outside the camp. So it's easier for them. Yeah.
Many who are wheelchair-bound didn't used to go to physical therapy because they found it too difficult to travel outside the camp. Now they can get help without needing to take a bus or taxi. Dabah and her co-worker also do some home visits, as in cases of hemiplegia and after an amputation.
Describe some of the equipment here.
We have electrotherapy, We have this electrotherapy. This is ultrasound. Actually, these are for pain relief, for healing, for strengthening, muscle training, for improved circulation, blood circulation. Among exercises, the outside room is for exercises. We do all exercises out there. And also we can train patients for walking, gait training by this room. Yes. That's it.
The services at this physical therapy office, Amira Dabah said, are less expensive than a session in downtown Beirut would be. A session costing 10,000 Lebanese pounds, or about $6.5 US, whereas a session outside the camp might cost 20 or 30 US dollars. Those in need of longer-term therapy pay a reduced price. As Dabah and I talked, the electricity went out in our windowless room. Dabah turned on her phone's flashlight, and we stood in near darkness until the generator started up and the lights came back on. It was expected to reach 42 Celsius later in the day. That's above 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Only those who can afford a generator can operate fans or AC units during the daily power outages throughout Lebanon. Thank you for listening to WERU. I'm Carolyn Coe. Thank you.